since 1775,
generations of Americans have fought
for our ideals and our principles.
American warriors secured the freedoms to create the United States of America.
They fought to end slavery.
They joined with allies to win two world wars.
They have responded with valor and honor whenever called. And they have liberated more people around the globe than any military in the history of the world.
Our all-volunteer forces of guardsmen,
soldiers,
sailors,
marines,
airmen, and reservists continue the mission begun
at Lexington and Concord.
Less than 1% of Americans serve in our armed forces.
The least the rest of us can do is to pay attention and get engaged.
This program is produced and broadcast for that purpose.
It is presented live and worldwide at 1041thetruth.com.
To engage, call 520-751-1041.
The American Warrior is on the air.
Hey, folks, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Welcome to another wonderful episode of American Warrior Radio. How many of you knew that Tucson had her own submarine? Does that surprise you? Well, it shouldn't. The USS Tucson was commissioned several years ago, and we're very, very honored to have the brand new commander, skipper, captain of the USS Tucson, Commander Mike Beckett's on the line with us from Hawaii. Commander Beckett, welcome to American Warrior.
Hey, how you doing?
We're just wonderful. Now, I tell you, both my producer, Silent Jim, and I wish we were doing this interview live over there in your shop instead of over the phone.
Yeah, it's a nice day. It's just a typical day in paradise.
Now, sir, just to give folks the background, you literally just assumed command of the USS Tucson on April 10th, correct?
I did. So just almost a month, just shy of a month at this point.
But you're not... You're obviously familiar with submarines. You graduated with distinction from the Naval Academy. Tell us a little bit more about your background. How many boats have you served on?
Okay, yeah, this is my fourth submarine. So I graduated, like you said, I'm originally from St. Louis, Missouri. So I grew up there and then went to the Naval Academy. I graduated in 1996. And then after some of my initial training, which is about a year and a half or so, I went to my first submarine, the USS Nebraska in Kings Bay, Georgia. So I was there for 3 years as a junior officer. And then when I left there, I actually stayed in Georgia and was an instructor teaching submarine tactics for 2 years. Then I came out here to Hawaii. So this is actually my third submarine in Hawaii. So I was the engineer officer for 3 years on the USS Key West. And so I was there. I did one deployment to the Western Pacific. And then when I left there, I went out to Yokosuka, Japan. So I spent 2 years there. I was in charge of theater anti-submarine warfare operations for 2 years, and then came back to Hawaii, and I was the executive officer on the USS Santa Fe and did another Western Pacific deployment. And then the last 2 years, I've been in Charleston, South Carolina. So I was the officer in charge of a moored training ship there, which is where we train all of our nuclear operators,
mm-hmm.
officers and enlisted, the final stage of their training. They go through... We have two prototype sites, one in South Carolina and one in New York State. And so I was in charge of one of those, and that's where we train all those operators and certify them before they go out to the fleet.
Now, Captain, a lot of folks may not understand, but all of our submarines are nuclear-powered, correct, regardless of the type of submarine?
They are, yes. All of ours are.
So you don't have to stop for gas for, what, 30 years?
Something like that, yeah.
Now, sir, I understand you're literally, this is not quite fair, but at American Warrior, we want to be the first to get the new captain of the USS Tucson on. But just in case, because you're relatively new to the boat, we're also, there you've got the chief of the boat with a very auspicious name, John Adams, who spent the last couple of years on the boat, chief.
Absolutely, Ben. I've been on board since June or July of 2012.
Okay, so Cobb, you guys just got back, if I'm not mistaken, if you're allowed to talk about this. You spent a whole lot of time at sea here on your the last couple of years, haven't you?
Absolutely, yeah. When I first got on board, we were in dry dock for about 3 months, and we're heading there here soon. But after that, we've been out to sea in preparation for our Western Pacific deployment that commenced there in September, and we just got back here in April or March.
So you have a good sense of the relationship, and I'd like to talk about that later in the program so our listeners can hear it. I've been told over the years that the namesake relationship between our community, the old Pueblo, as we like to call it, and the USS Tucson is one of the best in the Navy. And we'll get into some more examples of that. But welcome back, Cobb. It's good to hear your voice again.
Thanks a lot, Ben.
And you have visited Tucson.
I did. Yeah, back in within 3 months I've been on board, me and the old captain, Commander O'Hara, went over to University of Arizona and talked with the NR2C students.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, Captain, coming back to you, what is it, keep in mind, I'm a civilian, so I'm only speaking from what I've been told and what I've been able to witness, and I have had the great joy and honor of actually going to sea on the Tucson once or twice, but this is the one unique, there are many things about the submarine service, but this basically, when you become the commander, and this is your command, once you pass on from this command, is it accurate to say this will be your last boat or your last personal boat, if you will?
Most likely. For submarines, there's a couple billets you could go to where you're in charge of another submarine later, but it's very rare. There's only, I think, 8 of those spots in the Navy. So pretty much for us, this is kind of the pinnacle of our career. Everything after that, you may be in charge of a group of submarines, but you'll never really be in charge of a submarine and the crew like we are now.
Now, some of the listeners may be confused, sir, because I'm using commander, I'm using skipper, I'm using captain, and this being generally kind of an Air Force town, folks might get kind of confused. Explain to us the tradition of calling someone captain regardless of rank.
Yes, yeah, in the Navy, essentially the commanding officer of the ship is referred to as the captain, and that's, you know, tradition in the U.S. Navy, back from the British Navy, where we kind of got a lot of our customs from. And so we'll be referred to as captain, even though by rank I'm a commander, and pretty much all, submarine COs really are commanders at this point. But that is the tradition. Skipper is another term we'll use, and that means the same thing.
Now, to clarify, in fact, it makes me chuckle, the former commander of the Navy Operations Support Center Tucson here, he kind of rid me one time and said, gosh, it's awfully hard to be in a Navy town full of Air Force people because of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. So explain to our listeners, commander, what is the equivalent rank in the Air Force so they can wrap their mind around that?
So commander is an 05. It's the same as a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force or the Army or the Marine Corps.
Okay. Now, have you had a chance, Skipper, to get out to see it all on the submarine yet or on the Tucson?
With the commanding officer, but I did meet the boat in their last port visit on deployment and rode back, so about 10 days or so that I came back to, rode them back here to Pearl.
Okay, and what are your thoughts? You've been on two other fast attack boats, correct? The Key West and the Santa Fe?
Yes, I have.
So now this, again, correct me if I'm wrong because you're the expert, the Key West was SSN 722, the Santa Fe 763. The USS Tucson is 770, so that makes it a later class boat. But are they all of the improved Los Angeles class?
Well, all three are the Los Angeles class. The Santa Fe and the Tucson are in the improved Los Angeles class. The Key West is kind of what's considered the second flight of Los Angeles class boats, but the Santa Fe and the Tucson are essentially almost the exact same platform.
And the tradition, even though folks may get confused, we're calling the Tucson a Los Angeles class boat. What is the tradition of all those submarines being called the Los Angeles class?
Yeah, so traditionally we always refer to the class as the first ship of that class. So the first, we also refer to them as the 688 class. So the USS Los Angeles was SSN 688. So that was the first of this class of submarines, and that's why we'll refer to it either as Los Angeles class or 688 class.
And
the other kind of fast attack submarine classes right now, the Virginia class, so it started with the USS Virginia, and then the Seawolf class, which started with the USS Seawolf.
Now, real quick, so the Los Angeles is no longer an active submarine?
No, it is not. It was decommissioned a couple years ago.
And so I don't want to say the shelf life, that's probably not, but the expected service life of a Los Angeles-class submarine is approximately how long?
It's approximately 30 years is the kind of standard lifespan.
And the Tucson was commissioned September 9th, 1995, so you guys have got a little bit of a way to go. You're just about halfway, huh?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Now, we're going to talk a little bit when we come back after the break about life aboard the submarine because, again, as landlubbers, particularly here in the desert, we really don't understand. And I got to tell you, sir, I've got nothing but appreciation for the folks that serve on submarines. We, like I said, we're principally here in the desert. We're Air Force. We're Army. We've got some Marines down in Yuma. But just the distinction of that life. But clarify, all the folks that serve on submarines, they basically have volunteered twice, correct?
Yes. Yeah, the initial, obviously, to join the Navy, everyone is volunteer, and then you do have to essentially volunteer to join the submarine service.
Okay. And just very quickly, sir, explain to us, you alluded briefly to the Virginia class. How many classes of submarines do we have in the United States Submarine Forces?
Right now we have four. I guess kind of, you can almost say five. So we have, like we said, the Los Angeles class, the Virginia class, which is our newest, which there's about 10 or so that are commissioned at this point and more that are being built. The Seawolf class, which has three submarines, and then the Ohio class, which is a ballistic missile submarine. So there's 14 of those, and then there's four additional. This is where I'd say there's kind of five classes, which were converted to guided missile submarines.
Okay. Hey, folks, this is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're joined on American Warrior by the brand-new commander of the USS Tucson, Commander Mike Beckett, and the chief of the boat, John Adams. We're going to take a short commercial break. We'll be right back.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
And we're back, folks. This is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia, here in American Warrior. We are joined by the brand new captain of the USS Tucson, our very own fast attack submarine based out of Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, and also John Adams, who's the chief of the boat. He's the head enlisted person on the boat. Some folks would say he's the guy you go, well, I'll tell you, he's the guy. With all due deference, Skipper, John's the guy I go to. And let me explain that. I had the wonderful opportunity to spend some time on the USS Tucson, and I'm drinking that good Navy coffee. That's the way I like it. I was raised in Mexico. I like my coffee kind of 10:30 away. Well, not very soon thereafter, I had to go use the little sailor's room. And explain, well, I'll try and explain. I may not do a very good job, so either one of you explain this. When you go to the, as you call it, on the submarine, the head, what we would call the restroom, it's not as simple a process as we have in our life. If I'm not mistaken, it's kind of maybe a three-step or a four-step process. Does that ring any bells? The embarrassing part was I had to take care of business. I had to ask a sailor to come in here and show me how to flush the darn toilet.
Yeah, we have a procedure actually written aside by every toilet to for those particular users, just like you, Ben, to understand how to use those. But, yeah, it's a three-step process, really. You got to open the drain valve and open the flushing valve to flush the toilet and then shut both those valves. So it does take a little bit of talent.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Chief, but if you do it in the wrong order, the result may not be what you expected?
That's correct. You may overflow the toilet if you don't realize you didn't shut that valve properly. You might make quite a bit of mess.
There you go, folks. American Warrior. You're always going to learn something new if you're on a submarine. Now you know. Now you know. Now, coming back, Skipper, to the classes of the submarines, what they call traditionally the boomers. You served, if I'm not mistaken, the Nebraska was one of those larger, the Ohio or the Trident-class submarines?
Yes.
And explain to our listeners, if you would, the distinction between that submarine as far as its mission and its size versus the Los Angeles class, which is the boat you're serving now, and the Key West and the Santa Fe.
Yeah, so the Trident class, they are much bigger. If you see them pull in, if they were next to a Los Angeles class, and they almost look double the size. They're not quite double the size, but when you see it out in the water, it's very impressive. And the difference really is they have an entire missile compartment in the middle of the ship, which we don't have on the Tucson. And that's what has the Trident missiles inside. So their mission is a deterrence mission. They go out and essentially are undetectable for the time they're out at sea, and they're there as our country's main nuclear deterrent, our undetectable nuclear deterrent. That's different than what fast-tech submarines like the Tucson do, which we're we are faster, we are more kind of mobile, and we do much wider variety of missions and really are more of what the fleet commanders and the Navy needs us to go do at the time as opposed to kind of a standard deterrence mission.
And sir, are you allowed to just sort of outline the basic categories of that mission?
I can cover some of the major areas that we do. So, really, we do – our main missions are kind of centered when we go on deployment. And so, really, those are we do peacetime missions. So we do some of it's training with allies. We do intelligence reconnaissance missions. We do different and we also have the ability to do combat missions, and that's really what we're trained for. So you may have read some, in the recent years, submarines have participated in strike missions with Tomahawk cruise missiles. And we also have the ability to do anti-submarine warfare and anti-surface warfare, so either attacking enemy submarines or attacking surface ships. And that's really what we're designed for in a wartime environment. We also do have the ability to carry special operations forces. And when we discussed the earlier, we had mentioned the converted Trident submarines, which are now guided missile submarines. Those carry Tomahawk cruise missiles, and they also have a very robust capability to carry special operations forces.
Now, does the size make a difference as far as the size of the submarine, the fast-tech submarine, make a difference as far as the types of missions, as far as where you can go, if you will?
It does. For instance, those converted guided missile submarines, really technically can do the same missions as, say, the Tucson can, but in terms of we are a much more maneuverable submarine and really more designed for kind of a shallower water type of operations. And we're very adept at going to different places. They're larger submarines. They're a little more limited on where they can operate.
Okay, now just so folks can have an opportunity to sort of paint a mental picture here, Skipper, the USS Tucson is approximately how long, approximately how tall? About a length of a football field, sir? Or?
Just about.
Okay, and what, three stories tall from the sail?
Well, in the center, we're probably about 2.5 stories, and then obviously in the forward end and the aft end of the submarine, it kind of necks down.
Now,
just over football field long.
Okay, now I tell you that I think in someone's mind that sounds like a lot of space, but then you plug in the weapons, the engines, a nice little place to eat, bunks, etc., and what, 130 or so sailors?
That's true. And then when we go on deployment, we'll sometimes have even more. So it can be, it is very crowded when you come on. Especially a fast-tech submarine is definitely not spacious is never going to be used to describe it.
Now, I got to tell you, my first experience just going on to tour the USS Tucson, and on occasion there has been an opportunity when I come back to that discussion about the great namesake relationship. There are Tucsonans who've had the opportunity to actually tour the mayor likes to call his submarine. As I recall, several years ago, we ran almost 300 to 400 Tucsonans through the submarine over the course of the weekend. But one of the things that really, really struck me as someone who never served was the hot racking. Explain to our folks what that means.
See, the boat's going to take this question there, Ben.
Okay.
I'm the one that pretty much organizes the burning throughout the time that we're underway. And with the amount of people that we have on board, we do have to what we call a hot rack, which means that three people will share two racks. So what that means is one person will be on watch for about 6 hours, and the other two will be off watch and be able to sleep in those two racks. And then that person gets relieved, we have to wake up that one, and that one rack will be available for the other person just getting off a watch to be able to have a rack to sleep in.
So the upside is the bed is always warm when you crawl in. The downside is someone just crawled out when you crawled in.
Yeah, that's about it. And then the stowers that you have in those racks are not as spacious as you would think. So you have to limit the amount of items that you bring on board to be allowed to what we call pack out your rack.
Now, what is that seems an awfully hard way to live. What do you, the crew, do the sailors there operate on a standard 24-hour day like the rest of us do? Or one thing that struck me is that folks are always busy doing something. If they're not sleeping, they're on duty, or they're training, or they're eating, or they're exercising. There's always something going on the submarine.
That's correct. Recently, we've just changed our watch station or our watch standing time frame. We used to be working on a six-hour watches, which will basically be about an 18-hour day. And so you'll be on 6 hours of watch and then 12 hours off and back on watch again for that 18th hour. And then we recently changed to an eight-hour watch station, which then allows us to be on a kind of a 24-hour rotation.
Okay.
And that, the crew seems to really like that type of rotation, but in some type of operations that we do, we're not allowed to have that luxury to be on the eight-hour schedule.
Now, one of the things that it kind of it makes me smile, I know, Cobb, when you've been out to Tucson, when the crew does get back and gets to speak to some of the young people, one of the questions you often hear is, well, does the submarine have windows? Can you see the whales? Can you see the dolphins? And one of the best answers was that there's two windows on the USS Tucson. I know you didn't know this is going to be a quiz, but what are those two windows?
Number one and number two scope.
Okay, I was going to say there's a window on the washer and a window on the dryer maybe, but you've got 130, how many sailors you said, 138?
About 140.
And one washer and one dryer?
That's correct.
Okay. What are some of the other things? And I'll tell you, we've got about a minute before our next break, but there's two things in particular that the USS Tucson has that some of the other boats in the Los Angeles class don't have, and I want to talk about those when we come back. But what else is unique about, I mean, just clearly the life of a person on a submarine is challenging, but when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about the food, just the idea that when you all go to sea, you know, you're stuffing cans of food and stuff in every nook and cranny you've got, because really the only thing that limits the amount of time at sea is how much food you can carry, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Folks, this is your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia. We're joined by Commander Mike Beckett, the brand-new skipper of the USS Tucson, and the chief of the boat, John Adams. Great, great show. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior on 104.1 The Truth.
And we're back, folks. This is your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia. Just a great opportunity. I'm really, really pleased to be talking with the commander and the chief of the boat of our very, very own USS Tucson. If you're new to Tucson, you might think of it strictly as an Air Force town, but we actually have our very own submarine. The USS Tucson is a Los Angeles-class fast attack boat based out of Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. It's one of the best namesake relationships in the entire Navy. And don't correct me, fellas, I'm just going to go ahead and claim that. It's my radio show. I'm just going to go ahead and do that. So we're back with Commander Beckett and Chief Cobb Adams. We're talking a little bit about life on the submarine. I think there's one thing our listeners, you know, out west here, we're always used to wide open spaces. And I got to tell you kind of a funny story. Several years ago, we had the Sailors of the Year visiting Tucson. And historically, Tucson once upon a time was surrounded by 18 Titan II missile silos. And one of them remains open as a museum. And we had the Sailors of the Year down there visiting the museum. The docent who was giving the tour happened to be on duty there when the silo was active. And one of the children on the tour, he talked about, well, we'd go on alert and we'd have to button up the silo and nobody in, nobody out. And one of the children said, well, gosh, sir, what's the longest you had to be buttoned up? And he thought about it and he said, well, once we were down here, almost 72 hours. Well, the USS Tucson sailors snickered a little bit, and then we had to explain to him afterwards, you know, sir, we meant no disrespect, but for a submarine sailor, being buttoned up for 72 hours is not all that long a time. And I guess the point there is when you guys go to sea, you pretty much, you're underwater most of the time. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is true. It's really just going in and out of the home port or wherever, whatever port we're going to that we'll be driving on the surface. But it's very limited amount of time.
Now, just to give folks a comparison, we were talking about 72 hours. Commander, what's the longest you have been submerged days in a row?
Approximately 85 days.
Holy cow. So, okay. Cobb?
It was 78 days for myself.
So that's 78 days without seeing the sun. That's pretty darn good. That's a long time.
It is a long time.
And well, unless I think that this is what fascinates me, and I heard one time the comparison of our submarines to the space shuttle, in that it is that advanced a piece of equipment, in that they are both designed to go places that are not exactly friendly to human life. You manufacture your own water. You manufacture your own air. You've got a nuclear plant, so you're going to have to stop for gas. So really, apart from, as we talked before, the nature of the food situation, you could stay submerged as forever, I guess, if you were all robots, huh?
We could. I mean, you're right. Food is really the limit on how long we could stay submerged.
Which raises an interesting question to me. If you're submerged, and I'm sure the Navy does a very good job of making sure everybody is checked out before you actually deploy and go to sea. But how do you handle, if you're submerged for that long, how do you handle some of the things we take for granted? I have a toothache. Or, I mean, what is the situation as far as medical emergencies on the submarine when you're deployed?
Well, we have one independent duty corpsman who each submarine has who is assigned to us, and his main role is to provide kind of immediate medical care, check up on the crew, and be able to treat some minor issues. You know, he can give out some medicine, do stitches, things of that effect. Now, if we have a more serious issue, like you mentioned, some kind of major dental problem or something else, then we have to come up and communicate back to home. So either back here to Pearl Harbor, or, for instance, if we're on deployment in the Pacific, we can also call to Japan, where we have medical folks that are based who can then provide some more assistance to our corpsman. And then if it's beyond, if it's beyond his ability to help the sailor, at that point then we may be told, we might have to pull into port somewhere to get that sailor off the ship to get him treated.
Okay. Now, the Tucson, one of the things, gentlemen, I remember that it's actually a very accomplished. I don't think that word doesn't speak well to what I'm trying to say. But the Tucson herself has earned 3 Battle E awards, 2 Navy unit commendations, one in 2004, one in 2010. We can't obviously discuss the missions that earned those commendations, but the Navy unit commendation is the second highest award that can be given to a ship, and it'd be sort of the equivalent of a Silver Star to an individual. Correct?
Yes, I think that is about the equivalent. So it is the second highest really award that a ship could get. It's the Tucson's had a very prestigious history of really excellent performance.
And that should make all of us as Tucsonans very proud.
Yes, definitely. I think the ship, especially the last deployment, the ship has really made the city and the name sake proud.
Now, let's talk a little bit about that. When you pull into a foreign port somewhere and the sailors have an opportunity to go into that port, one of the things that's always made me proud is if they're in uniform, they are wearing, literally, they're carrying the name Tucson on their sleeve or on their chest as they're going into these ports, correct?
Yes. They have all of our sailors, their dress uniforms have the name on the sleeve. And even some of our other uniforms, they'll have it either on a name tag or on a ball cap. But there's really anywhere our sailors go in uniform, anyone would know what ship they're part of.
Okay, and I think that is so important because if folks do ever get a chance to go down on the USS Tucson, literally in your main corridor there is a Tucson Boulevard sign. And there's lots of things on the submarine to remind folks about the namesake relationship. I don't know if it's still this way, but my understanding was back in the engine room, there actually things are painted U of A colors.
It's actually in the machinery room. They have the U of A emblem throughout the machinery room, which is where our diesel is located at.
Okay. And one other thing I talked about earlier, I kind of teased the listeners, there's two things that are very unique about this submarine that no other Los Angeles class can claim. The first is the El Charro. The El Charro down under. When you guys go to sea, you are taking the El Charro with you, in a manner of speaking, correct?
Absolutely, Ben. When I went to Tucson 2 years ago or so, I had the pleasure of going to El Charro and meeting the owner there. And they help us a lot out through our galley, through our cruise mess. And we decorate the cruise mess with El Charro, and we represent them pretty good.
Now, Skipper, or Cobb, remind me if I'm not mistaken, because I may get this wrong. Just a couple of years ago, the chief of Tucson's police department decided to try and one-up that, and he's officially declared the USS Tucson to be the Tucson Police Department's 6th Division or 7th Division. Is that ringing a bell?
The 6th Division.
Okay, so literally, you talk about history. There are 5 divisions for TPD here in Tucson now. If we ever get to a point where we have to add a division, that will be the 7th Division. The 6th Division will always be that submarine out there somewhere in the world's oceans representing the Tucson, which I think is really spectacular.
We do as well.
Now, one other thing that you've got that a lot of your other compatriots have but is very unique to Tucson, you've got two principal weapon systems on the boat, Skipper, and explain to our listeners what those two weapon systems are.
Yeah, we have two primary weapons. First is the Mark 48 Advanced Capability Torpedo. So we have 4 torpedo tubes, and then when we go on deployment, a large number of torpedoes we can carry. And we also have the Tomahawk cruise missile. So we have 12 what we call vertical launch tubes that are on the very front of the submarine and external to the pressure hull itself. And then we also have the ability to launch those from the torpedo tubes as well.
And those Tomahawk missiles, where are they manufactured again? I forget.
Those are primarily made by a Raytheon Corporation based, and the main production is there in Tucson.
Right here in Tucson, Arizona. I got to tell you, fellas, one of the most wonderful experiences I've ever had was a skipper, one of your predecessors, brought the crew out to Tucson, and they toured the Tomahawk line out there at Raytheon in their uniforms. And you know, I mean, the workers out there, when they saw the guys come by with the Tucson on their uniforms and knew they were building a product that you may be called upon to use and has to work every single time. I mean, those workers just swelled up with pride. It was really, really wonderful.
No, that's great. And I had the privilege of meeting a couple of the members who came out who worked for Raytheon and helped build those, came out for our change of command a couple weeks ago, and that was great to talk to them.
I tell you, gentlemen, great guests. Makes the hour go by really fast. We've got about a minute and a half till the next commercial break. But, Cobb, maybe explain the other thing that's kind of unique about the Tucson. You have a direct relationship with Erickson Elementary School here in Tucson, and the crew has been doing something special for those students at Erickson Elementary having to do with a Roadrunner. Tell us about that little program.
Yeah, like I said, 2 years ago, I had the pleasure to go to Erickson Elementary and talk to the students there with Commander O'Hara, previous CO. And what we did is we adopted the Erickson Elementary Roadrunner, and we have a mock-up of a Roadrunner. And what we do is we take that Roadrunner wherever we go, and we get a crew picture with the Roadrunner to all the ports that we actually pull into, and we send that back to the school. And so they know exactly where Erickson Roadrunners are going.
So it's kind of like a Where's Waldo, but with a Roadrunner, huh?
Right, absolutely.
Wonderful. And just so our listeners know, those aren't the only connections. There's also Sargent Controls, which is a manufacturer here in Tucson that manufactures several systems that go on the boat. I don't understand any of them. I guess they help make the submarine quiet. I think that's one of the special things about this namesake relationship is not only do we have a good connection with the crew and their families, but we actually have some skin invested in the game. Folks, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We'll be right back with one more segment with Commander Mike Beckett, the new captain of the USS Tucson, and chief of the boat, John Adams. We'll be right back.
My daddy served in the Army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free.
If you want to discuss those who serve the red, white, and blue, dial 520-751-1041. If you want to support them, start with WoundedWarriorProject.org. Now, back to the American Warrior on 104.1 The Truth.
And we lit up your world like the 4th of July.
And we're back, folks. It's your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, our last segment here on American Warrior with a direct connection. I bet you didn't know Tucson had her own submarine, but we do. The USS Tucson, SSN 770, was commissioned September 9th, 1995. Has been serving our nation and protecting our nation. Very, very highly decorated submarine. And based out of Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, we're joined here on American Warrior by Commander Mike Beckett, who just took command of the USS Tucson on April 10th. And then also the chief of the boat, John Adams, who's been on the boat a couple of years now. Chief and Skipper, before we took the last break, we were talking a little bit about life on the submarine and some of the direct ties to Tucson. There's a group here in Tucson I've had the real pleasure of being associated with since commissioning, and that's the USS Tucson 770 Club. It's an all-volunteer group, and our mission really is to support the crew and the families of the USS Tucson. And that support varies. It can be all across the board. We do everything from when they're available. Sometimes we'll bring the Sailors of the Year out and host them here in Tucson. They ride in the rodeo parade, and they go out and speak to the kids. And then we also go out and spend time there with the crew and families in Pearl Harbor when we have an opportunity. We just had a delegation out there for the change of command, correct, sir?
Yes, you did.
And tell us a little bit about, given your experience now, this will be your fourth submarine. In your opinion, Skipper, how important is that namesake relationship? I know not all the submarines have got as strong a relationship with their namesake city. And sir, in your opinion, how important is that to the crew and their families?
I think it's very important. You're right. Not every of the four submarines I've been on, I've seen all spectrums. I've seen the Tucson, which is a great relationship, and I've seen others where there really wasn't any. I think it does provide some really good things for the crew. It gives them a chance to have the ability to go back and kind of talk about what they do and meet, you know, some people that they wouldn't normally see and go see things and talk to them about, you know, what life is like on a submarine. And there are some nice perks and things that we have on the ship that have been provided by people from the city. I think it's just a nice thing to help our quality of life for our sailors.
Now, folks, if you're interested in getting involved in supporting the USS Tucson, the crew, and their families, you can visit 770club.org. That's the website for the 770 Club. You don't have to be Navy. You don't have to be former military. You just have to be interested in supporting our namesake submarine and making sure I tell you what, I love being able to claim that we've got one of the best namesake relationships in the entire Navy. Now, sir, coming back, one of the things that's always fascinated me over the years, having been engaged with the military, is being a private sector, a small businessman, if you will, the parallels in management between the military and the private sector and the distinctions in management. The most obvious example, of course, being you have the advantage of the chain of command, whereas in the private sector, things are not quite that clear. But it's always fascinated me in particular, even with those limitations or those advantages, how unique it would be on a Los Angeles-class submarine where, as we talked about before, you don't always have the option of removing a problem child. Talk to us a little bit about the challenges of command or of management on a submarine.
Well, it's 140 people, which is not, you know, huge, but it is if you equate it to, you know, it is a pretty good-sized small business. And there's a wide variety of experience levels. I mean, the majority of our sailors are, you know, young first-term sailors, anywhere from 18, you know, to 23 years old is the kind of the majority of our sailors. And then we have more senior folks. The one difference I think we do have, because we do have a kind of a variety of age and experience levels, is we have a lot of people who can provide mentorship. And that's really what our chiefs do. That's kind of one of their primary roles is they really mentor and train those junior sailors. and I'm teaching them about, you know, Navy life and submarine life. It is not something that, you know, you would you can just walk into and understand. And it really takes a lot of help to get those people, to get those new sailors really in line with kind of our values and how we do things, and to help them out.
Now, we talked a little bit about the work day, that now you've just changed from an 18-hour work day to a 24-hour work day, and not all of that is on their duty station. A lot of that involves training and studying, and I think what to me one of the most interesting, and you alluded to it, sir, about the idea that when a sailor comes on the submarine, they may not be necessarily submarine qualified. And talk about what they've got to do to actually earn their, you know, pilots earn their wings, submarine folks have to earn their dolphins.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Ben. When a sailor gets on board, their first week and a half or so, we'll give a what we call our submarine qualification card, and they have to learn every system on the boat to the basic knowledge. And what the submarine dolphins really mean is that we can entrust those sailors to save our lives in a casualty situation. And once they know all those systems and understand the processes that go on through a submarine, they earn those dolphins. And once we put those dolphins on them, they feel a sense of pride of being a submariner.
I tell you what, it's very special, and I can see why they'd be proud to wear those dolphins. What just for folks who aren't familiar with the submarine service and maybe who have not had the opportunity to go out on the boat, literally when you're out there at sea, you've got young men that are, 18, 19, literally driving this submarine, correct?
That's correct.
Wow. It's not like they're driving Grandpa's old Ford. This is a pretty expensive piece of equipment.
That it is, and it does take a while to learn the philosophy or how the submarine actually drives through the water, especially when it's submerged.
Now, talk a little bit of one of the things I really enjoyed I did enjoy it, about being out on the USS Tucson. Explain to our listeners a little bit about the wonderful phrase called angles and dangles. How does that translate into civilian terms? What are you doing in the water?
Really what we're doing is we're changing the depth of the submarine from, you know, shallow to deep or deep to shallow, and we're doing that at a larger angle. So if you think kind of a takeoff of an airplane,
mm-hmm.
That's kind of what the type of, you know, angles that we're normally starting at. And, you know, it is fun to do. It's kind of interesting, you know, neat to see. But it really does have a purpose. So the reason we do that is we make sure that what we call stowage, but all of the equipment that we have on board is really tightly secured. So if we do, we'll do those angles initially in kind of in a controlled environment with people checking things. So if we had to do it in an emergency, we're not going to have pieces of gear flying around and hitting someone and possibly hurting one of the sailors.
Okay. And I got to tell you, that is the way, at least as a civilian, I could discern who was the experienced sailor and who wasn't. I mean, we were hanging on to anything we could hang on, and then you got guys like Cobb Adams that just lean a little bit, 30 degrees, and life is fine. It's something you have to see it, I guess, to understand that.
Yes.
Now, one of the other things I think it's important for our listeners who just so they understand why I have such a respect for you gentlemen and your sailors and the submarine service in particular, one of the real strong relationships that the Tucson has with the city of Tucson is a relationship with the Tucson Fire Department and Chief Critchley, who's also been a guest here in American Warrior. And there's one thing, and again, I would defer to you, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the greatest threats on the submarine is something that most folks may not think about. We tend to think about the enemy or a torpedo or something. But what are the parallels about firefighting, and why is that so important on a submarine?
Well, I mean, that is really probably our most immediate threat is a fire, because it can easily start. I mean, almost any – we have a lot of electrical circuits throughout the submarine. We have a lot of equipment. We have oil. We have other things. It can easily catch on fire. And because we're so such a contained and relatively small environment, you know, any fire that if we don't put it out very quickly is going to cause the whole ship to fill up with smoke. And that's really where the danger lies.
And so every sailor is trained to be a firefighter. They have to be.
They are. That is one of the main parts of the submarine quals that Master Chief Adams was talking about, is how to fight a fire, because you don't know when it's going to start and you don't know who is going to be close to it. So everyone on board has to have the ability to, you know, use a fire extinguisher, use our fire hoses, our other firefighting equipment, because the key for us is to quickly put the fire out, because we don't have any, we can't, when we're underway, we can't call the fire department. I mean, we are our own.
You are the fire department.
It does not take long for the entire submarine to fill with smoke if we're not able to put it out quickly.
Now, Commander Beckett, Master Chief Adams, what a pleasure it has been to have you here in American Warrior. We've got about a minute left. Tell us a little bit, if you can, what you can share. What's coming up in the life of the USS Tucson here in the near future?
Well, in the near future, we're about to enter a shipyard maintenance period. They'll be here in Pearl Harbor, the Pearl Harbor Naval Shipyard. They're just basically right across the water from where we normally are pulled into. And so the main purpose of that is we're going to modernize a lot of the submarine and get some very new equipment on board. Really, when we come out of this period, we'll be kind of the most advanced, capable Los Angeles-class submarine out there in terms of our tactical systems. And we'll also we'll be going into dry dock, so that requires a number of periodic just inspections to make sure that the submarine is being maintained to the level that it needs to allow us to continue to operate, you know, for the next 15 to 20 years.
Okay. Commander Beckett, welcome to Tucson. Chief Adams, thank you so much. Gentlemen, it's been a true honor having you here on American Warrior. Folks, if you'd like to know how you can support the USS Tucson, the family, and their crews, visit www.770club.org. This has been your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia, here on American Warrior. Thanks for listening in, folks.